Everyone has their own unique views and needs when it comes to financial success. If you'd like to leave your financial woes behind and live a life of financial freedom, you've come to the right place. Welcome to the Saving with Steve Show, hosted by Steve Sexton. The show will help you with the ins and outs of money. We talk about financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars and keeping you up at night. We talk about money, tax reduction, saving more, spending less, 401ks, risk management, retirement, and everything under the sun that relates to you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. Now, here is your host of Saving with Steve, Steve Sexton.
Hello, welcome to the Saving with Steve Show, where we talk about the ins and outs of money, pretty much everything under the sun that relates to you having a healthier, happier relationship with money. My name is Steve Sexton. I want to thank you for joining us today. More importantly, I want to thank you to all our listeners for sharing us with your friends, your family, your associates. We're just hit the 500,000 listener mark. We're so thankful for you. And I hope we can keep giving you some great advice here. Now, today is all about what's going on with real estate. Why are these prices going so high? What can we do about it? How do we sell our house for the most amount of money? If you have to sell, how do you get the most amount of money, especially if you haven't done anything for your house? And what about you're selling and moving? You have states like California where you have hundreds of thousands of people leaving. So let's get into it. Despite the uncertainty of a post-pandemic economy, companies like Sunday is making it easier for investors to buy properties and create competition to drive the prices up for homeowners. That means you. We have Paulina Rischow, the Chief Valuation Officer, and Shane Steele, the Chief Marketing Officer here, to provide insight on what's happening with real estate. Why these prices keep going up? How long do you think it's going to last? Okay. And they're going to uncover the games that are played by predatory real estate investors. Things you need to know to protect your dollars. Now, on top of that, oh my gosh, we've had so much influx of emails. Whether you're on the left, the right, the middle, it doesn't matter. People are concerned about the new Biden tax proposal. We're going to talk about what's in it. And more importantly, can't do nothing about the proposal now because it isn't law yet, but what you can do right now to reduce or eliminate your taxes. Now, last year, the state of California had over 663,000 people move out of the state. Why'd they move? They moved to lower or no tax states. The same thing is happening in places like New York, where they just institute a tax increase on the wealthy. Hey, they have the ability to move, so they probably will. Same thing is happening in Jersey, Illinois, and more. The reality is states like California don't want to lose your tax dollars and will do everything in their power to keep you paying. You're going to have to learn how to pass your state's domicile test. That's your state registry's test. We had Brad Galbraith, the creator of changemydomicile.com, that's changemydomicile.com, to help good folks just like you do it right. First of all, I want to welcome Brad to the show. Brad, thanks for joining us here.
Thanks so much, Steve. Looking forward to it.
As I said before we got started, when our viewers and listeners heard about you being on here, this is a big topic because taxes are going up all over from a state perspective. And quite frankly, many states become unaffordable. So one of the best ways is to move out of the state. Help me understand how you got involved with the changing the domicile business, so to speak.
Many, many years ago, I guess maybe 20 years ago, I was practicing law in Indianapolis, and my wealthiest clients kept retiring and moving to Florida. And they kept saying to me, what can you do to help us? And I would say, well, I'm not licensed in Florida, so I really can't. And I'd have to refer them to someone else. And I realized pretty quickly that referring away my wealthiest clients who were tuned in to this domicile issue probably wasn't the best long-term strategy. So I took the Florida bar, opened an office in Florida, and ever since I've been helping people from higher tax states make that transition to Florida.
Okay, I just gotta say this. I've talked to many of my advisor friends, and I've had even some clients where they figure they can split a state or one spouse is domiciled in one state and another in another. And for some reason, they're getting audited. They're getting hit with penalties and all that kind of stuff. So what determines somebody's state registry? What state they're domiciled in? What determines that? Let's start there.
Well, for the most part, when we're using this term domicile, it's good to specify that a lot of people call that residency. Mm-hmm. Most states technically call it domicile. But you can, of course, have a residence in more than one state, but you should, for tax purposes, only have one domicile. And so there's a lot of your listeners certainly who pay state income tax to multiple states, but there is one state that is their primary residence, and they may be paying state income tax, for example, in California because they own rental property in California. They may pay in Illinois because they have rental property in Illinois, but they happen to be domiciled in New York. And so their worldwide income is subject to tax in New York, minus some of those taxes that are paid in other places. So in general, when you use the term domicile, we're talking about really kind of tax residency. Now, what determines your domicile is state specific. That's one of the things that we have talked about a little bit. It's really not about the state you're moving to, it's the state you're coming from. Because every state has their own laws. That's just the way it works in our United States. It's not a federal law that determines which state you're domiciled in. It's your state law. So there are unfortunately plenty of cases that actually went all the way to the US Supreme Court about what state a person was domiciled in. And the argument oftentimes was, hey, I've got more than one state saying that I'm domiciled in their state. Federal government or federal courts, you resolve this. And the answer has really been, for the most part, states can have different laws. If you aren't smart enough to make sure that you are only domiciled in one state, there may be more than one state that tries to claim taxes. And so we have to look very specifically to the state that you are trying to change your domicile from, not just the state that you're trying to change your domicile to.
So in other words, whether you're New York, Illinois, California, and New Jersey, some of the biggest tax states, you really need to make sure if you're going to be living in Florida or in Texas or some other like Tennessee tax-free state, you really need to look at that. Like, for example, you're from Indiana. What kind of rules or domicile tests does Indiana have?
Sure. I can even be a little bit more specific than that. I would say, in general, about half of the states in our country have a two-pronged domicile test. The other states have a one-pronged domicile test. The two-pronged domicile test, the first part of the test is typically a number of days test. New York is probably the most famous of those states, where they say if you have a place of abode, if you have a place that you can live, whether rented or owned, and you are in New York 183 or more days, then you are a statutory resident and there is no reason to the second prong of the test. You are a resident of that state for their tax purposes, and any of the other things that you've ever heard of that you're supposed to do just simply won't matter. About half of our states have a law like that. Okay. Where there is a number of days. The number of days can vary a little bit from state to state, but most of them are in that 6 month in a day category. Mm-hmm. Ohio is the one very unusual state where they don't have 6 months in a day. They have 7 months in a day. They actually are more liberal, surprisingly. And they have said in order to hold on to as many people as they can who will continue to come back to Ohio in the summertime or off season, they've said, you know, we're going to be really liberal. You could be in Ohio up to 7 months. And if you intend to be domiciled somewhere else, we won't count that against you. They've gone the opposite direction of many states. And their thought is that way the former residents can continue to come back to Ohio, own second homes, do their banking and investing and go to the doctor there and give to charities there. And they've decided that that's what's best. But in general, half of the states have this number of days test. The second part of the test in those states, and the second part, and the only part of the test in most other states, is an intent test. Okay. And it is based upon your subjective intent. And unfortunately, there's no MRI machine that we can run a person through that lights up green if you intend to be domiciled in Florida and lights up red if you intend to be domiciled in New York. It doesn't work that way. And so every state has come up with different factors that they may look to objectively determine what your subjective intent might be. And that's what really varies very significantly from state to state. In some states, they say whether you have a safe deposit box in their state is extremely relevant. And in other states, that's just not even mentioned. In some states, in only a few states, they say where you give to charitable organizations really shows where your heart is. And if you still give in your former state, that's very indicative of your intent. And yet other states say absolutely positively, we will not consider that because we don't want to harm the charities in our state. It is very state specific when it comes to down to those indicators of intent.
Basically, what you're saying is you can only have one domicile where your tax state is. You can't have two.
Well, certainly two states could argue about it. You do not ever want to have more than one domicile because that means two states are arguing over which one gets to tax you the most. So that'd be a disaster. So we want to be careful so that you should not ever have more than one state of domicile.
Okay. So can you live in one state and be a domiciled resident of another? And you just talked about that 183 and stuff like that. Is there any states that have issues with that?
As long as we're talking about a second residence,
okay,
then most states recognize, really all states recognize, that you may have a residence in their state and yet not be domiciled in their state. Now, as you might imagine, the people who are being audited, for the most part, those are people who have a home in both states. Mm-hmm. Those also happen to be all of my clients. My clients don't typically live where I live in Naples, Florida, year round. It gets rather warm in August, mm-hmm. and they tend to head back north. So most of my clients have a residence in more than one state. And the fact that they have a residence in a northern state doesn't mean that they are going to continue to be domiciled there, but it does mean that we probably need to be even more careful in making that change of domicile, to dot the I's, cross the T's, do as many things as possible so that it will be very obvious that the intent is to be domiciled in Florida, despite the fact that there is still a home up north. Now, the fact is that one of the analogies that I really like to use that is a visual that you can think of is an apothecary scale. Mm-hmm. So when looking to these intent tests, to the various factors, what we want to do is we want to pile up as many factors in favor of your low tax state as possible.
Yes.
You pile up whatever still weighs in favor of your northern state, and we want your low tax new state to greatly outweigh the other state. That doesn't mean that there's nothing in favor of the northern state. You may still have a residence there. You may mm-hmm. have children there. You may still own a business there. But what we want to do is we want to make sure that if a fact finder, a court, or a taxing authority were to ever take a look and audit or even litigate, we want it to be very clear to them that this case just isn't worth pursuing because you've done so many things to heavily weight that apothecary scale in favor of your new state.
Perfect. We're going to hold on right there. I want to talk to you about many of those things that people can do when we come right back. So we're going to take a break. Got to pay some bills. We'll be back in a few minutes with Brad Galbeth.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve show.
Don't let your financial woes keep you up at night and prevent you from living a life of financial and personal freedom. Hi, I'm Steve Sexton, host of the Saving with Steve show. We're going to be talking about the ins and outs of money, those financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars, causing stress, keeping you up at night. We're going to talk about money, tax reductions, saving more, spending less, your investments, risk management, retirement, and everything associated with you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. So if you've ever dreamed of living a life of financial and personal freedom, you owe it to yourself and your family to tune into the Saving with Steve show. Join me, Steve Sexton, on the Saving with Steve show as we talk about everything under the sun when it comes to money. To learn more about the show, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us, savingwithsteve.us. We'll see you soon.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton.
Hello, I want to welcome you all back to the Saving with Steve show. I want to truly thank you for tuning in. I appreciate you letting your friends and family and associates know about the show. All the replays are available at savingwithsteve.us. Again, that's savingwithsteve.us. If you're enjoying the stories of helpful information and insight on Saving with Steve, then I encourage you to subscribe to our YouTube channel so you never miss a show. And check out a few of our affiliates at UK Health Radio, BBS Radio, Talk Radio New York City, E360 TV, and Las Vegas TV Network. All these networks are dedicated to empowering you to solve problems and then lift your spirits, as well as live a life of financial personal freedom. Also, follow us at Facebook and join the Saving with Steve Insiders Club. At savingwithsteve.us, you get all the replays, exclusive gifts from our guests, and more. So with that, we have Brad back. We're talking about the factors that people look at. What specifically are some of those factors that the franchise tax board here in California or whatever it is here there in Florida, would they be looking at as factors for somebody's domicile?
Yeah, and I can provide a bit of a list of those things that are somewhat universal.
Yeah, please.
Those things that really apply in most every state across the country. The word of caution is that doing just those things that are general may not be everything you need to do for your state. But some of those general things are the things that are really almost just obvious. If you're going to change domicile to a new state, you would get a driver's license in that new state. Mm-hmm. You'd register a car in that new state. You'd register to vote in that new state. If there's a homestead exemption, you would file for that homestead exemption in your new state. And one thing that may not be quite as obvious, but is true in many of our states, is if you're changing to a new state, there may be a form available either through a county or the state franchise board or the Department of Revenue, the taxing authority for the state, that allows you to complete an affidavit that says, as of this date, I intend to be domiciled in my new state. So in Florida, every county has one of those. It's called a declaration of domicile. It's completed in front of a notary, and you just swear that that's your intent. You then record that with the county, putting everyone on notice that that's your intent. Now, that's not going to do it. That's not going to be the determining factor. But it is very nice to have a very clear piece of paper that says, it is my intent as of February 25th, 2021, that I intend to be domiciled in my new state. So those are some of the universal things, but there's a few others that are certainly worthy of mention. And some of these are a little bit less obvious. I mentioned a safe deposit box earlier. Mm-hmm. Now that's not relevant in every state, but I would say in at least half of the states, that appears either in case law or regulatory materials or state publications, that may be very indicative of a person's intent. If you have a safe deposit box still in your former state, it sounds like that really is your intended long-term, that's the place where you intend to eventually return.
Okay.
And that could be a problem if you're ever audited for domicile. A couple other things that are interesting that people don't always think about. One of those might be professional licensing. Mm-hmm. Many of us and many of your listeners are professionals of one sort or another, whether they're an attorney or a doctor or a nurse or a realtor or appraiser, you name it. If you think about it, you register as a professional with your state. That's a state database. If the state wants to determine whether they're going to audit you or not, a very simple thing they can do is look and say, all right, well, this person is still a licensed physician in the state of California, yet he says that he's now domiciled in Idaho. That doesn't really make much sense to us. We better inquire more. So if you're changing your state of domicile, it doesn't necessarily mean you have to give up your professional licenses. If you're ready to, even better. But in most instances, people want to at least change from a resident licensed physician, as my example, to a non-resident licensed physician. If there is no differentiation between resident and non-resident, at a minimum, change your address. Do not continue to use your in-state address for those purposes. Use your new state address for those purposes.
Okay, so and what about things like a doctor?
Yeah, that varies by state. It's interesting, though. Most states will say that when trying to determine your intent, again, there is no MRI machine. There's no easy way of determining that. And it's just a little bit too obvious to just ask, you know, do you have a driver's license in your new state? And so what many states will do is they'll look to some of these less obvious things that they believe that if you were really intending to change your domicile, you would probably find a dentist and a primary care physician in your new state. Depending on the state, they may ask about other professionals, insurance professionals, financial professionals, accounting professionals, tax professionals, lawyer. Do you have these professionals in your new state? At a minimum, do you have them in that new state and maybe still in your old state with them coordinating? But there should probably be some connection with the new state. Now, that varies by state. Again, interestingly, I mentioned Ohio earlier. Ohio, when passing their laws, made the intentional decision to not count those things.
Okay.
In fact, what they wanted to do is have their state residents who were changing their domicile still go back for medical care in Ohio. Still have the Ohio banks as their banks, still have the Ohio investment professionals and CPAs and lawyers. So it does vary by state, but in most states, your choice of physician, whether you have that in your new state or your old state, can be indicative of intent.
Okay.
Similarly, things like social and religious organizations.
Your church.
If you're a lifelong member of the Methodist Church in your northern state, it would only make sense that if you were changing your domicile to a new state, that you'd probably find a Methodist church or some church at least to attend in Florida. If you're a lifelong member of the University of Michigan Alumni Association, you'd probably join the University of Michigan Alumni Association of Florida.
Mm-hmm.
You would likely do those things. If you've been active in charitable activities, you'd probably find some of those charitable activities to do in your new state.
Okay. So what are the things that people should consider before changing their domicile?
Yeah, certainly. I think it would only make sense to do a financial analysis and make sure that it makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that happens when you change your domicile is you give up your homestead exemption in your current state. in order to get the homestead exemption in the new state. Almost every state says you can't have a homestead exemption in both states. Homestead exemptions are for the most part reserved for those people who are domiciled in that state. In some states, the homestead exemption is very significant. Just as an example, in Michigan, the homestead exemption is very significant. I've done the analysis for clients before where we ended up deciding that their savings on income taxes were outweighed by the additional costs of giving up the homestead exemption. So it is important to not just hear that the new state is better, but to do the financial analysis, figure out whether it really makes sense to make that change. And if you're going to do so, when do those financial benefits kick in?
As I told you at the beginning, there's a number of people that we know that have gotten audited over this. So how do you defend against an audit? And how do you defend against an audit of a domiciled state?
Yeah, that really is a great question, because at the end of the day, that's what we're all concerned about. If you make the change and you get audited, you know, oftentimes you've already lost. If you're making a change and you're going into retirement, looking forward to spending some time with the kids and grandkids and on the golf course, and you end up in an audit, that's just not what anybody wants.
No.
I would say it is very important when you make your change of domicile to know the state that you're coming from, to know it inside and out. And that is the idea behind changemydomicile.com. Making sure that you have a state-specific list to go through. Keep records of everything that you change. If you're changing from a safe deposit box in your high-tax state to a safe deposit box in a low-tax state, keep that information. Have the records as to when you changed, when you closed the old box, when you opened the new one. Just gather information about the date that you registered to vote in your new state, the date that you gave up your homestead exemption in the former state. Keep all of those records. And importantly, because many states do have this number of days test, track your number of days so that if you're asked, you know for sure that you're in good shape, so that even if you're audited on that number of days test, that you're not going to run afoul of the laws.
So now what I need you to do, because we have about a minute and a half left, I'd like you to talk about changeyourdomicile.com, how people can go and get involved with you, how people can get involved with that so they can change their domicile right so they don't get hit with the audit and the stress and all that.
So yes, at changemydomicile.com, what we have done is we have gone through the 20 highest tax states and done a specific state analysis for each of those states. What we have done is we've outlined so that it's easy to determine what is the financial benefit of changing from that state. What is the income tax rate in that state? How does the property tax exemption work in that state? Does that state have a gift tax, an estate tax, an inheritance tax? So that you can actually go through and quantify the difference between the two states. And then what we have done is we've gone through the state statutes, state regulations, and case law for each state. And we've pulled out the information that is specific to that state domicile decision so that it's all in one place so that our clients can read through that and see what they should be doing. And then we make it even easier. What we do is we have created a checklist for each state, very state specific, that based upon California, for example, what are the things that California says they will look at so that you can go through that checklist one by one, keeping records as to the date that you made each of those changes. And so in doing that, your chances of triggering an audit go way down. And certainly if you were to be audited, you at least know you've dotted the I's, crossed the T's, and that you're going to be successful in that audit if you've done the things on the checklist.
Thank you, Brad, for being part of the show. It's changemydomicile.com is the best way for people to get in contact with you, get the information, and so on, correct?
Absolutely. Changemydomicile.com. And once there, there's some free information, and then there's a link where you can download your specific state's package.
Brad, thanks for being on the show. This is a big topic. We'll probably have you back. So stay safe down there in Florida. We'll see you.
Great. Thanks, Steve.
Bye-bye.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve show.
Don't let your financial woes keep you up at night and prevent you from living a life of financial and personal freedom. Hi, I'm Steve Sexton, host of the Saving with Steve show. We're going to be talking about the ins and outs of money, those financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars, causing stress, keeping you up at night. We're going to talk about money, tax reductions, saving more, spending less, your investments, risk management, retirement, and everything associated with you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. So if you've ever dreamed of living a life of financial and personal freedom, you owe it to yourself and your family to tune into the Saving with Steve show. Join me, Steve Sexton, on the Saving with Steve show as we talk about everything under the sun when it comes to money. To learn more about the show, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us. Savingwithsteve.us. We'll see you soon.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve Show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton.
Hey, I want to welcome you back to the Saving with Steve Show. Wasn't Brad just wonderful? Glad to have him on the show. Get you the information, because the last thing you want to do is be moving and find out you're stuck paying taxes from another state, which is no fun. And you know, states like California, New York, Illinois, and all those high tax states, they want your money. I truly want to thank you for tuning in, and appreciate you letting your friends, family, and associates know about the show. All the replays are available at savingwithsteve.us. If you're enjoying the stories of helpful information and insight on Saving with Steve, then I encourage you to subscribe to your YouTube channel so you never miss a show. By the way, check us out at a few of our affiliates at UK Health Radio, BBS Radio, Talk Radio New York City, E360 TV, and Las Vegas TV Network. All these networks are dedicated to empowering you to solve problems, uplift your spirit, and live a life of financial and personal freedom. You can also follow us at the Saving with Steve Sexton Facebook page and get helpful hints, additional tips for finances. And check us out at the savingwithsteve.us, where you can get all our replays, exclusive access to our after-show videos, guest gifts to take your life to the next level. Let's talk about that Biden tax proposal. Big picture, Biden's tax proposal seeks to raise taxes by approximately $3.3 trillion over the next 10 years. The reality is the plan has several tax limits because it's expected to increase taxes on high income earners, corporations, and a reduction in taxation for lower income earners. The bottom line for his tax proposals is tax rules for individuals are in flux. Some are going to possibly head up, some are going to possibly head down. So again, I want to make sure you're very clear. This is a proposal. This is politicians posturing. This is trying to get leverage. You see it on the news media. It's designed to make you anxious. I want to be very clear. Nothing's in law yet. Well, here's what they're proposing. First of all, the corporate tax rate. It's going to go from 21 to 26. Payroll taxes. Currently, you pay payroll taxes as an individual of 6.2%, and the company pays 6.2%, unless you're self-employed, which means you pay 12.4, all the way up to $148,000. Well, they're proposing to have that go up for people above $400,000, where they still have to pay that. Qualified business income. If you're a small business or self-employed, you used to be able to deduct 20% of your business income. Now, that deduction would possibly get eliminated under Mr. Biden. Higher top income earner tax rate. So if you're just a gross income is $400,000, you could go from a 37 through a 39.6 tax break. Next piece, they've got capital gains rate at 15%. Once you hit over 400,000, you're going to pay 20%. But if you hit over $1 million in dividends and capital gains, the tax plan talks about increasing the rate to 39.6 plus the Medicare surcharge of 3.8. So that means you can hit almost 44%. Itemized deductions. Now, before the Tax Cuts and Job Act, we had what was called the PEAS limitations. All that happened is it would reduce the allowable itemized deductions for people with incomes over a certain threshold. It would just tune it back. What they're looking to do is cap itemized deductions benefit at 28% for individuals with incomes over $400,000. One of the positive things that might come of this is replacing the traditional deductibility with refundable tax credits on your retirement plan contributions. So that means if you contribute to your 401k, you get a tax deduction right now. And then your funds go tax deferred. Under the proposal, they seek to provide a tax credit for the amount that you contribute. So that means if you're contributing $5,000, you get a $5,000 tax rate, and a portion of that would be refundable. Also, 1031 exchanges, this has been on the board for many, many years. Politicians are looking away with doing away with 1031 exchanges. So that means if you sell a property, you cannot defer it to like-type property. That could happen. Estate and gift taxes. Currently, the estate tax is 11.7, and you have the ability to gift $11.7 million per person. You know, you have two married people, it's twice, all right? They're looking to decrease the estate tax to $3.5 million. Now, they're also looking at limiting the gift to only $1 million. Also increasing the estate tax from 40 to 45%. Now, one of the big issues is the step up in basis. When somebody passes away, they're looking at possibly eliminating it. And I think this is a bargaining point, but if that were to occur, many people who have family-owned business in the family for decades and decades and generations would now be in a position to where that farm they have, it's worth $10 million. They're now going to have to pay $3.8 million in taxes when it's transferred from a father to a son. Now that's going to create some issues. Why? Because you have a $10 million farm, they might only make $150,000 a year. They don't have $3.8 million in savings, which would put them in a position to either have to pay for a very large life insurance policy or actually outright sell the farm. So that could cause some damage to across our farmers and others across the country. On top of that, there's some personal income tax benefits or tax deductions for people. Child tax credits. Increased tax credits go from $2,000 to $3,000 per child that's 17 or under, and an additional $600 for any child under five. This would benefit would be fully deductible. So if you didn't make any money or made $30,000 a year, you would likely get a tax refund for these credits because you wouldn't be paying taxes. Next is a child and dependent tax credit. This credit's max is $8,000 per child, $16,000 for family, and 50% of it would be refundable. In addition, they're looking at a first-time homebuyer tax credit. Offers up to a $15,000 capped at 10% of the purchase price for new homebuyers. And benefits would be refundable and advanceable. Now, that's what's going on. Scares a lot of people. But here's the thing. Nothing's happened yet. Nothing has taken place. One of the things that you probably want to look at here is this. What can I do? Well, first of all, if you're in control of your income and your deductions, you can say, hey, look, this is likely to take effect in 2022, okay? So if you have control of your income, you can take your income into 2021 instead of 2022 and move your deductions to 2022 instead of 2021, thereby reducing your taxes. On capital gains, you can look to reduce capital gains by offsetting gains with loss investments, which is called harvesting, offsetting your gains with your losses, utilizing installment sales contracts to defer the capital gains for 30 years down the road, utilize non-qualified annuities as a tax deferral tool when income exceeds $1 million, or specialized pension plans. When it comes to itemized deductions, you can look at charitable giving. Make sure you have state and local taxes, writing off your mortgage interest. Make sure you get everything you can. When it comes to 1031 exchanges, you'll have to utilize qualified opportunity zones where you can defer, reduce, and even eliminate capital gains, installment sales contracts to defer capital gains. There's many things that you can do to make this work. Now, when it comes to the estate tax limit, you can utilize your charitable structures to reduce, eliminate taxes. You can use irrevocable trust to do that as well. You could do the same thing for the lack of step up in basis. One of the other things taxpayers can do to defend against taxes, consider rental property real estate. You got huge deductions for depreciations that effectively create losses by cutting your cash flow, invest in oil and gas contracts. You're going to need a advisor developer. You can invest in solar where you can get a 26% tax credit on the gear, not the property. Biden's looking to increase that up to 30%. Got to remember what's going on is what's happening in the future. This year, next year, and how much and who really knows. The key for each person is to be a good steward of their own money by taking steps now, by discussing your financial and tax situation with a tax professional and financial advisor, make sure everybody's on the same page, and then becoming as tax efficient as possible while keeping more money in your pocket now, as well as in the future, so that the least amount of your money falls through the cracks to the IRS. We're going to have some more. We had Brad Galbraith with changemydomicile.com. Now we're going to be talking to you Sunday, and Polina and Shane, they're very nice ladies. Next week, we're going to be talking about how much you need to retire. So with that, I want to let you all go. We're going to take a break, pay some bills, and we'll be right back.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve Show.
Don't let your financial woes keep you up at night and prevent you from living a life of financial and personal freedom. Hi, I'm Steve Sexton, host of the Saving with Steve Show. We're going to be talking about the ins and outs of money, those financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars, causing stress, keeping you up at night. We're going to talk about money, tax reductions, saving more, spending less, your investments, risk management, retirement, and everything associated with you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. So if you've ever dreamed of living a life of financial and personal freedom, you owe it to yourself and your family to tune into the Saving with Steve Show. Join me, Steve Sexton, on the Saving with Steve Show as we talk about everything under the sun when it comes to money.
To learn more about the show, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us. Savingwithsteve.us. We'll see you soon.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve Show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton.
Hey, I want to welcome you all back to the Saving with Steve Show. I truly thank you for tuning in. I appreciate you letting your friends, family, and associates know about our show. All the replays are available at savingwithsteve.us. If you're enjoying the stories of helpful information, insight on Saving with Steve, please join our Saving with Steve YouTube page. By the way, check out a few of our affiliates at UK Health Radio, BBS Radio, Talk Radio New York City, E360 TV, Las Vegas TV Network. All these networks are dedicated to empowering you to solve problems, uplift your spirit, and live a life of financial and personal freedom. Now, let's get to our most favorite topic today, which is real estate. I want to welcome Paulina Ryshikov. And then we have Chief Valuation Officer Shane Steele. Sunday's the only marketplace that connects homeowners looking to sell their house as is to the largest network of investors to ensure that their homeowners are getting the best, highest possible offer. On top of that, we have Paulina here. It's going to share with us what's going on with this real estate market. It's crazy. We were just talking earlier. My next door neighbor, whose house is valued at $800,000 on Zillow, for kicks and giggles, he put it on the market for $975,000 and sold it for $1,111,111. That's interesting. But it's crazy what's going on. And I'm curious if you can give us some insight on what's going on with the real estate market, Paulina.
Of course. So what happened with the pandemic is people who already own their homes are slightly older demographic, and they're a little bit more at risk. So they're afraid of putting their houses on the market. They don't want a lot of people walking through their property, holding open houses. They also don't want to be looking for the next property to move into, downsize, like I said, because they're more at risk. At the same time, people who were planning to buy a house, who are aging into that, starting a family, the millennials who have a job, they're seeing the interest rates drop. So for them, it's cheaper to buy a house right now. And they're looking. So we're in a situation where the supply is down. The listings in California fell almost 50% compared to a year ago. And the demand is up. So you're seeing this imbalance. That's why the market is so hot and crazy.
Now, how long do you think this market will last? Well, you know, there's a lot of seniors that don't want to go out there and look for another house or have people traipsing through their house because they're concerned about the pandemic. But as we heard here in the state of California, the governor's planning to have the whole state open, providing a few things occur. Do you think that will continue that way, or will they take an opportunity to start putting their house on the market because the prices are so high?
I think that we will see an increase in supply for sure. At the same time, the interest rates are going up a little bit. The market will cool just a tiny bit, but the millennials are aging still. Over the next 3 years, we'll see another 15 million of them reach that median age of when they're buying their first property. So we're in this house hunting market for a little bit of time. Another thing that happened to contribute to the supply shortage is that we don't have enough materials to build new homes right now. There is a supply shortage, and it's going to take some time for the builders to ramp up production, because for the last 10 years, they were kind of licking their wounds from the last recession when they got really hit. So they were underproducing, and we don't see enough new supply on the market.
I jumped the gun on you because I really wanted to understand what was going on in the real estate market, because not only do we have people, there's not a lot of inventory out there, but in the same token, just last year alone, California lost 663,000 residents because they wanted to go to a lower tax state. When it comes to Sunday, your company, how did Sunday get started? What was the brainchild behind that?
Yeah, happy to jump in. So our co-founders started Sunday because they saw that there was just kind of a terrible experience for homeowners when they were looking to sell a house that needs love. So if you're an owner of a house that's dated or damaged, maybe isn't quite ready for a new family to move in, you typically want to go find a property investor who will buy the house as is, and they'll put the money in to renovate it and then resell it. And unfortunately, that industry has a pretty bad reputation. There's quite a few predatory behaviors that are happening in that industry. And it's been a terrible experience for homeowners to find a trusted buyer in that situation. And unfortunately, a lot of these buyers are lowballing, sometimes they'll walk away from offers. They started this company with a mission to help homeowners get the best outcome when they're in that situation of needing to sell a house that needs love. And we're taking a completely different approach to it, which is rather than making an offer to the homeowner, what we do is we market the property to our database of property investors. So rather than having to pick up the phone and call, you know, a handful of different investors that may not be reliable, we will market the property. In the Inland Empire, we have almost 700 property investors that are waiting to find these properties.
Oh, wow.
So we do all the work to, you know, package up the property with photos, a 3D floor plan, you know, video walkthrough. We have an inspection report. None of that costs anything to the homeowner. So there's no fees or cost to sell through our marketplace. And then we market the property to those, you know, almost 700 investors across the Inland Empire. So they're competing to buy the house. And that drives up the price so that investors are sure to get the best possible price. We disclose all of the offers to them. On average, in your area, homeowners are getting 13 offers. The spread from the highest to the lowest offer is usually around 70K. So you can really see that range that you get. And unless you've talked to the right investors, you may not get that highest offer. So that's what we're solving for, is how can you market your property effectively to a large vetted group of investors in the local area?
I find this interesting, being in the financial business. I have some people come to me and they've had some things happen in their life, whether it be health issues or kids that they've tried to help start business with and their money goes away and they realize they have to downsize and all that stuff. And they don't have the money to refurbish, even put their house in an order to where they can sell. I'm curious, there's got to be other reasons why besides those two. What are people typically coming to you? Hey, this is the reason why I need to sell my property.
Oh, well, we're definitely seeing a lot of people where we operate in California. We see a lot of people relocating. So that's probably the number one reason. And, you know, as Paulina mentioned, a lot of people who are older and retiring, they're looking to downsize. They're looking to get to more affordable markets. And so that's definitely a component of what we're seeing with people coming to Sunday. And in some cases, you know, they've built up a lot of equity in the home, but they don't necessarily want to put the time and the money into that whole checklist of things there a real estate agent might ask them to do to the house if they're going to list it on the market. And so it just saves them a ton of time and money to be able to sell it as is through a marketplace where they can connect all these property investors.
We're also seeing a lot of inherited properties. For example, you have siblings who inherited a property from their parents, and instead of arguing what to do about it, they sell it and they share the money. We're seeing some of the more heartbreaking stories, I think, around COVID and what happened with COVID. One that stuck with me was a woman who escaped her abusive husband and she had to move in with her mom, and they sold the property, her mom's property. So the husband doesn't know where they are and they moved. It's not a trend. It's a one-off, but occasionally you'll hear stories like that. And we were able to solve this for them, which felt good.
There's a lot of situations like that where people may be going through some sort of distress in their lives. And oftentimes it's financial distress. It could be related to medical bills and just the cost of living, especially here in California. So in some cases, people just don't even have the choice. They don't have the money to be able to fix up the house and put it on the market where, you know, a new family could move into it. You know, they really do have to go find a property investor in this situation. So it's things like, as Paulina said, sometimes it's inheritance. We see people who are, you know, they've lost a spouse or they've gone through a divorce. We also see in some cases people who are landlords and they have rental properties and they're just, you know, looking to kind of offload a rental property.
Yeah, I know about those. They all say they've been to Home Depot 1,610 times. A lot of the things that you've told me about, the health, the family issues and things like that, a lot of people, you know, it seems like they don't know where to turn. So they look at commercials on TV and they see the guy that says, hey, I'll buy any house for cash and all that stuff. But they don't realize what goes behind that. And my understanding, and we talked, you said this earlier, there's a little bit of predatory type behavior taking place. Could you share how that takes place so we can open that up to people understanding, oh my God, I didn't realize it happened. So if that's happened to me, I need to look out for that.
The challenge is that unfortunately in this space, it is a zero-sum game for these buyers, right? They're looking to drive down the price as far as they can, because that means more money in their pocket, which is, you know, in contrast to our model, which is the highest price we can get, our interests are aligned with the homeowner. Some of the tactics that these investors use, and there's actually a whole industry of educational like workshops and coaching to help train property investors on how to find desperate sellers. I mean, it's really an industry that has a terrible reputation. There's like these known tactics that they use to try to find people in these difficult situations who maybe don't have all the information, they don't know where to turn to. And, you know, they might offer an offer that sounds really good and then later walk back that offer or potentially walk away from the transaction altogether. And some of the, you know, the worst things that we've heard is in some cases, they'll present what sounds like a great offer. Then they'll send in somebody to do an inspection. It turns out it's like one of their buddies that's going in. It's a phony inspection. And of course, they come back noting, you know, substantial repairs that they've made up to essentially walk back that offer. So it's, you know, essentially a bait and switch tactic.
That's horrible. When somebody walks through your system, how would that work? For example, somebody gives you a call and say, hey, I need help. So do they contact you by phone? Is it an app they fill out on your website? How does that work?
Yep. So you just go to sunday.com, and it's Sunday spelled like the ice cream with an E at the end. And there you can fill out the form just to request to talk to one of our customer advisors. So they'll give you a ring, or you can just call us directly. There's a phone number on the website, a 1-800 number. And you
can tell us that 1-800 number. So if somebody's...
It is 1-800-214-4426.
If you're considering have Cindy get a hold of you, just give a call to 1-800-214-4426. Again, that's 1-800-214-4426. So after they give you a call, what happens then?
So one of our customer advisors will walk through our process, kind of explain how it works, gather some additional information about the property and the situation. I mean, our goal, I said, with our mission is to help homeowners get the best outcome when it's time to sell their house. And in some cases, that means like maybe we're not the best outcome. So our job is to really figure out what's their situation, what's important to them, what's their timeline, what's the condition of the property. So they'll gather all of that information over the phone. And if it's a good fit, we will schedule an appointment for one of our local market experts. So we have a bunch of people in the Inland Empire, and they'll actually come to the property and visit the property just to gather any additional details. Prior to coming to the property, we will have put together an estimate of a range of what we think we will get in our marketplace from investors, because we've done lots of due diligence about the property. We've looked at comps, we've sort of estimated a construction budget all ahead of this appointment. And then we're sort of validating things in that walkthrough. At the appointment, we'll present what's our marketplace agreement, which is essentially a 30-day agreement that lets us market that property to the investors, those almost 700 investors in Inland Empire. We'll spend a few days preparing a property profile with photos, with the floor plan, with all of the details that an investor would want to see, including like a video walkthrough and the inspection report. All of that information means that you don't have to have those investors walking through your house. They're able to look online at all.
Shane, I'm going to hold you on right there because I have to take a break. So stick with it, everybody. We'll be right back with more with Paulina and Shane at Sunday.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve show.
Don't let your financial woes keep you up at night and prevent you from living a life of financial and personal freedom. Hi, I'm Steve Sexton, host of the Saving with Steve show. We're going to be talking about the ins and outs of money, those financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars, causing stress, keeping you up at night. We're going to talk about money, tax reductions, saving more, spending less, your investments, risk management, retirement, and everything associated with you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. So if you've ever dreamed of living a life of financial and personal freedom, you owe it to yourself and your family to tune into the Saving with Steve show. Join me, Steve Sexton, on the Saving with Steve show as we talk about everything under the sun when it comes to money. To learn more about the show, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us. Savingwithsteve.us. We'll see you soon.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton.
Hello, welcome back to the show. This is Steve. We've been talking with Shane and Paulina at Sunday. We've been talking about how Sunday helps people that are looking to sell their at his house, as Shane calls it, houses that need a little love. And she just talked about, once you make contact, we're going to have somebody come over to the house. We're going to review the house. We're going to give you an idea of what the value is of the house. And then they're going to set up a contract with you for 30 days so they can market the house. And with that, I'm going to give it back to Shane.
And so, as I mentioned, we're putting together that property profile, which takes us a few days to put all those materials together. That way, investors have all the information they need to make their bid on the house without setting foot. So you don't have to have lots of people coming through the house. And then within 7 days, you'll get all your offers back. In the Inland Empire, it's on average 13 offers that are coming back. We've told you a range ahead of time. And so our goal is to get, you know, as many offers as we can. And those get presented to you. So you have full transparency. And then the homeowner gets to decide if they want to take one of the offers. Usually they take the highest price. If for some reason, you know, you decide you don't want to sell the house or don't want to sell through Sunday, you can walk away after the 30 days.
Just out of curiosity, are most of the offers all cash offers?
Yeah, it's all cash and there's no contingencies. And that's one of the things that is really important about those investors, that they are fully vetted local investors. They've agreed to our terms and conditions. You know, we've done our homework to make sure these are reliable buyers so that the seller can really count on these offers when they come through. And then in terms of the timeline, we can close in as little as 10 days. So if somebody's in a hurry, it can be super fast. The other advantage is because it's as is, you can leave anything behind. If you're ready to go and you've got some old stuff and you just don't want to have to clean it up, that's an advantage. We also offer a $10,000 cash advance before closing because a lot of people are dealing with some financial situation where that can really help with the transition, whether it's paying bills or helping with the move. And again, there's no fees. So the way that we make money is a percentage of what the investor is paying. So again, our incentives are completely aligned with helping homeowners get the best price.
That's right. So in other words, if the investor pays more, you get paid. And so everybody wins. It's great. So Paulina, when you take a look at a house, when you're valuing it, what are the things that you're actually looking at?
Everything. Well, your location is the most important thing.
Okay.
You know, you mentioned your friend's house that's down the street from the best high school. That's really important. So schools are very, very important. Whether it's on the busy street, whether there is a hospital nearby, it has to be accessible. Community is very important. You can usually tell whether it's walkable. And then depending on where you are, what's valued more by the community, you can also run comparables. You can see what kind of properties appreciate quicker. That's how you select what you value this house against.
So like, for example, I've always curious about this. Actually, I was talking with a bunch of people the other day. When it comes to like landscaping, how the backyard looks, all that kind of stuff, how much does that play into the valuation?
It plays into the valuation when you want to sell the house, not when we're buying the house, right? Because investors will do landscaping. So when you want to make that house marketable, when you want to sell it, it's really important that landscaping looks good.
Clarify, if you're selling it to a family to move in, that's when landscaping really matters. If you're selling it off market to a property investor, that's not going to factor in because that'll be part of the project.
So in other words, they're going to walk in, they'll probably power wash the house, repaint the inside, readjust some appliances to make sure they're updated, redo some flooring, and then they're on their way. Is that pretty much the size of it or?
Not necessarily. So one of the reasons why you see this big range between the offers, Shane mentioned $70,000, is because every investor, they have their own secret sauce, right? So they can save on materials. They can save on sometimes labor costs if they have different teams that work very efficiently. They know how much they need to spend on the rehab, and they also have their different exit strategies. So where one investor thinks that all they need to do is, like you said, you know, power wash it and put it back on the market, the other one will come in, they will rip everything out, remodel it entirely, and they will sell it higher because they are betting, or maybe they already have an end buyer, right, that told them that that's what they want. They have a family that wants to buy this house, and they know that they can sell it higher. So this is one of the reasons why we're seeing this range in offers.
Oh, and I was just going to say outdoor space is like at a premium right now, right? With everybody spending more time at home, having more of that outdoor space. So the landscaping is one aspect, but just having that space is really
having a decent sized lot is important.
Yeah.
I was joking with Shane before that a lot of people will have buyer's remorse. People who bought houses with huge pools once the economy opens up, and they will figure out exactly how much that pool maintenance is.
Well, that and the fact that I'll say this, we are the only ones without a pool on the block. We use our pool as much as they do, which means they don't use their pool. So some of them spend, you know, $100,000 putting in a pool, and, you know, they don't even use it. Except for that once a year where they have everybody over, but that's about it. I'm just interested in those things. So I just have this one question. When investors, they all have their own secret sauce. Do they all have their own little profit margin in mind? What is a typical investor looking to make when they sell, when they buy a property, put money into it and flip it?
That will also depend on investors. Smaller investors, and it will depend on their volume, right? So if they have more properties in 1 month that they are flipping, they can accept smaller margin. If they only have one project that they're working on that they can source, they will probably look for a bigger margin. And it's interesting that you ask that, because I just looked at it the other night. When you have highly appreciating market, you will see that investors are picking up bigger projects because it's harder for them to find these deals. So they will be looking for projects that they can flip in a year as opposed to just 6 months, and they will do more to it. So they will add a second story to the house, or they will add a master suite to the house. They will do an addition, or they will really expand square footage. It will vary from investor to investor. And the reason we have 700 investors is because there is a huge range, and so that their profit margin ranges. I mean, there is a rule of thumb in the industry. It's called the 70% rule, how they buy, which would be 70% of what they think the value of the property is going to be once it's fully remodeled.
I get it. Now, so what I'm trying to make sure everybody understands is this is a business like anything else, and people have a plan and they want to stick to those plans. So if you're dealing with somebody who's predatory, they're going to do whatever they can to make sure they make their margins really big. And for somebody like yourself, who's bringing together these 700 investors that are looking to get their piece of the pie. And this is a wonderful market. So if somebody has a little bit bigger house, they can actually probably do better. Is that right?
Well, the predatory behavior comes from people who might not necessarily be very good at this business. And they're trying to buy very deep to make sure that they don't lose money, right? Because the more money they make on the purchase, the less they're worried about being able to remodel it and resell it.
Okay.
So they're hedging their risk upfront.
So in other words, they're typically the new people who don't know what they should be doing or how to do it properly. And they just been to one big class.
Exactly. And they're coached to do this. Exactly. And they're coached. And you'll see a lot of these coaches, and there are many books written and lectures. And yeah.
So in other words, they figure they're paying somebody $30,000 or $40,000 to learn how to do this. They better follow the rules or follow what they've been taught.
Exactly. And especially in this market, we're in a very highly and quickly appreciating market. And this is the time when you see a lot of this predatory behavior entering the market as well, historically, because, you know, when there is a lot of profit to be made, that's when you'll see a lot of people trying to chase that profit.
Hey, Shane, Paulina, I want to thank you for joining us today. And could you do me a big favor and just share how people can get in contact with you? Because I know there's a number of people who would need your help. They're in that situation where they don't want people tracing through their house, because our demographic is perfect for what you guys do. So please share that with us all.
Yeah. So if you're a homeowner and interested in learning more about us, you can just go to sunday.com. There's lots of information on the website, and there's a place where you can click to request offers, and you can fill out the form, or you can call that 1-800 number. In fact, if you're an investor and interested in working with us, you know, they're not all predatory. We have a bunch of great ones that we're working with, and we have a whole process for how we vet them. They can go to investor.sunday.com. to sign up there. And then we also work with agents, because a lot of people who are in this situation who need to sell a house that needs love, you know, they're working with an agent to help them get the best outcome. And we partner with agents as well. So agents can leverage our platform to get access to the type of buyers that their client might need. They can actually send us an email. If you're an agent and you're interested in Sunday and partnering with us, you can just send an email to info@sunday.com.
I got to remember, everybody, this is not Sunday in the day, but it's Sunday like the ice cream. So
yes.
It's sundae.com. And if you want to get a hold of Sunday, you want to dial 1-800-214-4426. And if you're a realtor listening to this, it's info@sunday or investor@sunday. Get in contact with them. They're looking to help you just like you can help them. I want to thank you all for being here, because what you're educating our listeners at can make a big difference, especially in this marketplace where we've got somebody turning 65 years old, almost 10,000 a day. So there's a lot of people in a situation where they might need your help. So thanks again for joining us. I'd like to have you on sometime in the future. Come back for an update and see how things are going.
Sounds good.
That'd be great. Thank you,
all
Steve.
Right. Hey, you have a great day. Be safe. Be healthy. Okay.
Bye.
Thank you. You too. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us. That was Shane and Paulina from Sunday. If you have a house that needs a little love, that you don't want to fix it up, deal with realtors, deal with agents, all that kind of stuff, and you're looking to sell it, by all means, get in touch with Sunday at 1-800-214-4426. Now, we did have Brad Galbraith talk about changing your domicile. So if you're looking at selling your house and moving out of California and moving to a less taxed state or some other place, you want to make sure you change your domicile, which is your state registry. Because if you don't, state of California might be following you, asking you for some money. So you want to make sure that happens. Now, next week, we're going to be talking about not only having some great guests, but we're going to be talking about the things you need to do, how much you need to save for retirement. So with that, I want to thank you all for joining us. Hope you have a wonderful week. Looks forward to seeing you next time. Have a great day. Bye-bye. This is Steve Sexton with Saving with Steve.
Thank you for joining us for the Saving with Steve show, hosted by Steve Sexton. To learn more about the show and how to become a guest or sponsor, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us. Join us again next time as we continue to talk about everything under the sun that relates to you having a healthier, happier relationship with money. This has been the Saving with Steve Show, hosted by Steve Sexton.